Mahabharata, Chapter 21, The Pandavas Exiled. After everyone had left the gambling match, Dushasan said to Duryodhan, O great hero, that old man gave everything back that we strive so hard to acquire. The Pandavas have been sent back to their kingdom, and we are back where we started. The two brothers consulted Karna and Shakuni. They condemned the blind king for his softness. How could he have been so foolish as to show kindness to such powerful enemies? That was a serious mistake. Unless they acted quickly to reverse the situation, they would soon be facing a great danger. Their spies had already reported how the five brothers were proceeding toward Indraprastha. Bhima was whirling his massive mace. Arjuna was repeatedly twanging the Gandiva. Nakula and Sahadeva were waving their great swords, and Yudhisthira held aloft his spear. It was clear that they were ready to fight. On Shakuni's suggestion, Duryodhan again approached his father. Their only hope, Shakuni said, was another gambling match. This time the Kauravas should win something. The Gandhara monarch revealed his plan, and Duryodhan immediately went to Dhritarashtra's chambers. Duryodhan found the king seated on a golden couch. Sitting at his feet, he said, Father, we must recall the Pandavas for another game before it is too late. We have stirred to anger a number of venomous serpents. How can we possibly expect them to tolerate the insults we offered to their wife? A powerful enemy must be destroyed by any means. We have started something which we cannot now stop. Duryodhan told his father that if the Pandavas could somehow be sent away, then it would give him time to find allies and build his strength. Using the Pandavas' vast wealth, he could make his position unassailable. First, however, Yudhisthira and his brothers had to be removed from the scene. Duryodhan described the plan he and Shakuni had contrived. The king should call the Pandavas back for one final game of dice. It was clear that they and the Kauravas would not be able to coexist peacefully. Therefore, whoever lost the game should live in the forest in exile for 13 years. During the final year, they could emerge from the forest, but had to remain incognito. If they were discovered, then they would have to again go into a forest for a second 12 years. Such would be the stakes for this final game. Dhritarashtra remained silent after his son had stopped speaking. It was true that the Pandavas were now a real threat. Who could gauge the outcome of a war between those powerful brothers and his sons? But another gambling match? What would Vidura and Bhishma say? It would probably be wiser to let things stand as they were for the present. Yudhisthira was virtuous and would keep his brothers in check. Seeing his father's hesitation, Duryodhan implored him. The king felt himself weakening. It was almost impossible for him to refuse his son. And if Duryodhan were to win the final match, as seemed likely, then the Kauravas would become the undisputed rulers of the earth. He himself would sit at their head. Even though Yudhisthira was the world's emperor, if he agreed to the stakes and he lost, he would certainly feel honor-bound to enter the forest. Considering that everything lay in the hands of fate, the king agreed to Duryodhan's proposal. He ordered that the Pandavas should be brought back to play one last game in which everything would be settled. When they learned of this, the other Kuru elders objected strongly, but Dhritarashtra would not listen. He ignored their counsel, and messengers were sent from Hastinapur to find the Pandavas. Seeing her husband's blind acceptance of Duryodhan's dark plans, Gandhari became anxious. She had been mortified to learn of Draupadi's ordeal in the assembly hall. It seemed that Duryodhan lacked all moral scruples. How could the king support him? How could he possibly have sat in silence as the gentle Pandava queen was so harshly abused? When Dhritarashtra was alone, the blindfolded queen approached him. Do you not recall Vidura's advice when Duryodhan was born? He warned us that if we did not cast aside that disgrace of our race, he would surely cause our destruction. It seems this is now coming to pass. O ruler of men, do not for your own fault sink into an ocean of calamity. Do not accept the counsel of wicked-minded persons who are but boys. Who would rekindle a great fire after it has been extinguished? Who could be so foolish as to again provoke Kunti's peaceful sons? The king remained impassive. Gandhari was wise and thought always of his welfare and the good of the Kuru house. But her advice now was like a bitter medicine, and he could not swallow it. She continued, "You alone have caused the disaster we now face. Lead your sons on the right path. Do not watch them rush towards death. Abandon Duryodhan now. The affection you bear for him will destroy this kingdom. Let your mind, guided by wise counsels, follow its natural inclination toward peace and virtue. Surely you know that prosperity acquired through wickedness is soon lost, while that which is gained through honest means takes roots and descends from generation to generation." Dhritarashtra sighed and stood up to leave. "If it is time for the destruction of our race, then what can I do? If it is God's will, then let it take place without hindrance. How can I influence events ordained by destiny? Let the Pandavas return and again gamble with my sons." The queen said nothing more. It was hopeless. Surely the end of the Kurus was nigh, since no one could sway the king from his folly. She called for her servants and was led back to her quarters. The Pandavas had gone a considerable distance from Hastinapur, when to their surprise they saw a group of messengers from Hastinapur, headed by the Pratikaman, approaching them. Yudhisthira dismounted from his chariot, and the servant stepped forward and said, "O Yudhisthira, your uncle has ordered. O best of the Bharatas, the assembly awaits you again. Come back for one final game of dice." Yudhisthira could immediately understand Dhritarashtra's intention. He turned to his brothers and said, "All creatures receive the good or evil fruits of their work as ordained by the Supreme. Whether I play another dice game or not, the fruits of my past activities are unavoidable. Although I know the Kauravas wish to destroy me, I cannot ignore the summons. A living creature made of gold had never before been seen, yet Rama allowed himself to be fooled by a golden deer. When calamity approaches, men's minds become confused. Surely the path of religion is subtle and highly difficult to ascertain." Yudhisthira turned and retraced his steps back to Hastinapur. He was fearful. Despite his best efforts to follow the orders of his elders and avoid conflict, still a war seemed inevitable. To refuse Dhritarashtra's summons would only bring the conflict into open more quickly. But what would be the result of another game with Duryodhan? The five brothers soon arrived back at Hastinapur. To the consternation of their friends and well-wishers, they again entered Dhritarashtra's great hall. Although he knew full well that he had no chance of success, Yudhisthira sat down to play dice with Shakuni one last time. When the Pandavas were again seated in the hall, Shakuni said, "O Yudhisthira, the old king has returned your wealth. That is well. Now let us play with a stake of greater value. If we are defeated, we shall accept exile in the forest. We will wear deerskins and remain there for 12 years. During the 13th year, we will live in a city, town, or village. If you should discover us, however, we shall be exiled in the forest for another 12 years. If you are defeated, you and your brothers, along with Draupadi, will accept the same conditions." Shakuni's mouth curved into a sinister smile. The ivory dice in his hands clacked as he explained the stakes. Whichever side was the loser would be expected to surrender their kingdom to the winner. The kingdom would be returned when the 13-year period was over. As the stakes were described, all those in the hall cried out, "Alas! Shame upon Duryodhan's friends, that they do not warn him of the danger he brings upon himself." Some of them turned to Dhritarashtra and said, Whether or not Duryodhan understands his foolishness, you should order him to stop. He will bring down only death and destruction. Check him at once. This is your duty. Dhritarashtra said nothing. Yudhisthira replied, O king, how can one like me, who always observes a kshatriya's duty, refuse your challenge? Everyone knows this about me. Besides, it is Dhritarashtra, my father and guru, who orders me to play. What can I do but accept the stakes? The game began. Everyone in the hall sat breathless as it moved towards its inevitable conclusion. Finally, Shakuni's, I have won, echoed around the hall. The Kuru elders cried out, Alas, shame! This ancient house is doomed. Duryodhan laughed and ordered that deerskins be brought immediately for the Pandavas. When the brothers had put on the ascetic garb and were preparing to leave for the forest, Dushasan spoke in great happiness. Now Duryodhan's unopposed and absolute sovereignty shall begin. The Pandavas stand vanquished. Indeed, they are miserable. Whether or not we have acted sinfully does not now matter. It is clear that the gods have bestowed their grace upon us, for today we have defeated our enemies. Kunti's sons are deprived of happiness and kingdom forever. Those who laughed at Duryodhan shall now abandon their royal robes and armor and go to the forest, possessing nothing. Relishing the moment to the full, Dushasan continued to taunt the Pandavas with cruel words. Seeing the five brothers in their black deerskins, resembling five powerful rishis, he said, Although the Pandavas look like wise men installed in a sacrifice, they should now be considered unworthy to perform any sacrifice. Dushasan then turned toward Draupadi. King Drupa did not act well when he bestowed this princess upon the Pandavas, who are impotent men. O Draupadi, what joy will you get from serving your husbands in the forest? Select a better husband from among the Kauravas, so that this calamity may not overwhelm you. Do not waste any more time waiting upon the Pandavas. Bhima rushed toward Dushasan, like a Himalayan lion might rush toward a jackal. O crooked wretch, you rave in words uttered only by the sinful. You have won today only by Shakuni's skill, yet you still dare to boast. As you pierce our hearts with words as sharp as arrows, show I shall pierce your heart in battle to remind you of your words today. Then I shall send you to Yamaraja's abode along with your followers. Giving up all shame, Dushasan laughed and danced around in the king's midst, singing, O cow, O cow! Bhima restrained himself with difficulty by fixing his mind on virtue. He spoke again to the sneering Dushasan. Wretch, how do you dare use such harsh words, having won by foul means? I shall surely tear open your chest and drink your life-blood in battle, or I will never attain to the region of bliss. My anger shall be pacified only when I have slain all of Dhritarashtra's sons. Yudhisthira headed for the door, followed by his brothers and Draupadi. In great joy, Duryodhan walked alongside Bhima, mimicking his powerful lion-like gait. Half turning toward him, Bhima said, Do not think that by this you have gained anything over me. I will be back to kill you and all your followers. Neither of us will forget what has happened today. Dhritarashtra was still silent. Bhishma, Vidura, Drona, and Kripa, all whom were shedding tears to see the Pandavas go into exile, called out, Fie, fie! They looked helplessly at the blind king. Before the Pandavas left the hall, they stopped before the king, and Bhima spoke again. I shall kill Duryodhan and all his brothers, O king. Arjuna will slay Karna, and Sahadeva will kill the evil Shakuni. My words will be made good by the gods. When I have beaten Duryodhan to the ground with my mace, I will then place my foot on his head. Arjuna added, The promises of superior men are not empty words. You will see all this come to pass on the 14th year. As Bhima directs, I will kill Karna, who is malicious, jealous, harsh-speeched and vain. I will also slay all kings who foolishly stand against me in battle. If my vow is not carried out, so shall the Himalayas be moved, or the sun's rays become cool. I will not fail. This will come to pass in 14 years if Duryodhan does not return our kingdom. Arjuna felt sure that Duryodhan would never return the kingdom. The war was inevitable. All the brothers knew it. As Arjuna finished speaking, Sahadev, sighing like a snake, his eyes red with anger, said, O Shakuni, you have destroyed the fame of your race. What you call dice are actually pointed arrows aimed at your heart. If you have anything left to do in this life, do it now, for I shall certainly kill you in battle when we return from the forest. Nakula also vowed to rid the earth of Duryodhan's followers. Having made their promises, the brothers turned toward Dhritarashtra. Yudhisthira said, I bid you farewell, O king, and also you, O Kuru elders. I shall see you all again upon my return. I bow to you and ask your blessings. The elders were too ashamed to reply. They prayed for the Pandava's welfare. Then, after a moment, Vidura spoke. Your mother, the revered Kunti, is a royal princess and should not be made to go to the forest. She is delicate and old. Let that blessed lady remain in my house while you are gone. Yudhisthira agreed, saying, You are our uncle and as good as our father. Let it be as you say, O learned man. We are all obedient to you. Without doubt, you are our most respected guru. Please command us what else should be done. O Yudhisthira, best of the bar to race, Vidura replied. Do not feel pain by this turn of events. There is no shame in being defeated by sinful means. You five brothers will reside happily in the forest, enjoying each other's company, along with the company of the virtuous Draupadi. You have already received many instructions from rishis and saints. This exile will be a further opportunity to receive spiritual training. The learned Domya and the godly Rishi Narada will instruct you as you lead a simple forest life. Actually, you will be benefited by your withdrawal from the worldly affairs and wealth. Vidura wished them well, praying that they would return in safety. He blessed them that they might obtain from the gods the various opulences, victory from Indra, patience from Yamaraj, charity from Kuvera, sense control from Varuna, strength from Vayu, forbearance from the earth, and energy from the sun god. Finally, Vidura said, Leave then with our permission, O son of Kunti. None can accuse you of ever having acted sinfully. Farewell. Yudhisthira thanked his uncle for his blessings and bowed low before him, Bhishma, and Drona. Each of his brothers then offered their respects to the Kuru elders, who in turn blessed them. They then made their way out of the hall. Before following her husband's, Draupadi approached Kunti to ask her leave. As she entered the inner chambers, a loud cry went up from all the ladies there. They were plunged into grief to see the Panchala princess about to enter the forest. Draupadi saluted and embraced them all, according to their status. She bowed before Kunti, who lifted her up and embraced her. With tears in her eyes, Kunti said, O child, do not grieve for this great calamity which has overtaken you. The hearts of good women are never moved by the inevitable influence of destiny. Knowing all your duties, you should follow your husbands with a happy heart and continue to render them service. You are chaste and accomplished, and you adorn the ancient Kuru race. It is fortunate indeed for the Kurus that they were not burnt by your wrath. O scentless one, now go in safety, blessed by my prayers. Protected by your own virtue, you will soon attain good fortune. Kunti's voice was choked. She had never been separated from her sons before. How could she face 13 years away from them? Sobbing loudly, she asked Draupadi, O child, take particular care of Sahadev. That gentle boy holds a special place in my heart. Draupadi replied, So be it. and still wearing a single blood-stained cloth, her hair disheveled, she left the inner apartments in tears. Kunti followed close behind. As she came out, she saw her sons, shorn of their royal robes and clad in deerskins. They were surrounded by rejoicing foes and pitying friends. Overwhelmed by motherly affection, Kunti embraced them and said with difficulty, "You are all virtuous and well-behaved. You are devoted to the Lord and never engaged in the service of your superiors. How then has this calamity overcome you? I do not see whose sin has fallen upon you. Surely it is due to you having taken birth in my womb that you now face this reversal, despite your numerous excellent qualities." Kunti lamented loudly for her sons. How would they survive in the wilderness? She decided that Madri had been the more fortunate wife. She had already attained her liberation. Surely she had foreseen this terrible disaster and had entered Pandu's funeral fire in relief. If Kunti had known that this was to happen, she would never have brought her sons from the mountains to Hastinapur. Kunti let out an anguished cry. "O great Creator, have you forgotten to ordain my death? Surely this is why I am still living, although faced with such tragedy. O my sons, I obtained you after so much difficulty. How can I leave you now? I shall accompany you to the forest." Folding her hands, she prayed aloud to Krishna. "O Krishna, O you who dwell in Dwarka, where are you? Why do you not save me and my sons, the best of men? Those who are wise say that you always protect those who think of you. Why is this now proving false?" Kunti then censured the Kuru elders who could stand by and watch as her virtuous sons were exiled to the forest. Weeping, she turned to Sahadev. "O my son, you should not go. Stay behind and earn the fruits of virtue by serving your mother. Let your pious brothers fulfill the terms of the vow." The Pandavas were pained to see their mother grieving. They consoled her as best they could, then took their leave. Vidura gently took Kunti by the hand and led her toward his house. Gandhari and the other ladies of the royal house also wept, covering their faces with their lotus-like hands. With difficulty, the brothers made their way along Hastinapur's crowded streets. The news of their exile had spread quickly, and the streets were filled with grieving citizens. Led by Domya, they left the city and the people they loved, unable to say anything to anyone.